At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You've got a Halloween party. You've got to pick one of these guests. Liz Truss, Boris Johnson, or Freddy Krueger?
Oh, Freddy Krueger.
We're going to go for Halloween characters.
No doubt. Oh, yes. I thought you were going to say Adolf Hitler. I was going to think.
Liz. You've got Donald Trump, Nigel Farage, or Michael Myers.
I don't know. Who's Michael Myers?
Oh God! All right, Adolf Hitler.
What the? The escalation's crazy.
I think I'd go with Nigel. I've already met Nigel a few times, so I don't mind talking to him. Which upsets somebody when I say that. He's quite easy to talk to. I might have some problems with Hitler. So, yeah, I think, Nige, I think.
Madge.
Oh.
Vladimir Putin. Kim Jong-un.
Oh.
Or Stalin.
Oh.
Is it handsome bank robber Stalin or is it Wario Stalin?
Like, that makes a difference.
It makes a big difference. So I can ask him about his cool bank robber stories. And then if it's Wario Stalin, I'd be like, didn't you kill your own son? And then it's going to be very depressing for a while. Okay, so is it? Are we talking bank robber Stalin or old man Stalin?
We're going to say old man.
They're
all in there.
I guess
Kim Jong-un's quite young.
Oh, no, because I have to ask him, like, are you really the most handsome guy in North Korea? Because if you are, I might have to move there. And then I don't understand what he'd say, because he doesn't speak English.
I think he does. I think he pretends he's like one of those guys, like Putin pretends that he doesn't speak English. But
I'll go Kim Jong-un, because apparently he likes basketball. So I'll just shoot hoops against him for a while. So I'll go Kim Jong-un. And I'll dunk on him. I'll be like, see, you're not the best basketball player in North Korea, mate.
There we go.
I'll humble him.
Alex, and what about you, Al? What about Alex, you?
What would be my three choices then?
Oh, can I give you three to choose from?
Oh, you've been thinking. Go ahead.
Priti Patel, Luella Braverman, or Kimmy Badenoch. Come on.
I think Kemi's the only one I've not heard make Holocaust survivors upset, so I'll go with
what did Patel do? Did she make Holocaust survivors upset? Did Patel do that?
She was a death penalty, so
and also you'd have to put up with her saying that she has anger.
Yes,
what you could do is have a podcast episode and you could get her to have the worst takes. And that would be a banger episode because she has the worst takes. Like women were having more children when there was no maternity pay. The worst take, so you can. That's a good one, you know. That's a because Braveman will get you demonetized straight away. Oh, so you know that's big brain. That's genius, guys. Badenoch is a good pick.
Welcome everyone to the Sunday Roast, and today we're back to our usual format of the Magnificent Four. Madge, can you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Big Madge Studios. You might have seen me on here before because I'm on here a lot, and I've got my own channel where we discuss a range of different topics.
Hello, I'm Liz Webster, and I'm the founder of Save British Farming, and I try to educate everyone about your food.
And our guest for this week, Michael, can you please introduce yourself?
Hello, my name is Michael Lambert, and I've got a YouTube channel. I just rant on about politics, and particularly about Brexit.
And I'm Alex Kerr, also the journalist, historian, and co-host of the Sunday Roast. Budget. Madge, how's the budget? Did you like it?
I'll tell you what, right, because I've been working for the last 2 days as well, I've been trying to figure out if it's good or not, and it's been a real pain because there's not much analysis that I've seen. I'm waiting for the big dogs on the BBC and the other channels, like The Actual Economist, to really dissect it. It's interesting because Labour boxed themselves in quite a lot with their no tax increases on working people. So doing the national insurers, doing the employers' national insurance, that's probably going to hit workers. And I think Reeves kind of conceded that. Again, it's going to, the thing I'm frustrated about most, I think, is the thing that affects me, and it's going to sound stupid, but it's the bus cap increase. That is really stupid, I think. And the fact that they are, you know, pushing more kind of contributions onto businesses means that, you know, their price is going to go up as well. So I think it's going to have a chilling effect a bit on people going to use hospitality. There's quite a few cafes talking about how, you know, prices are going to have to go up, and, you know, just don't accuse us of being greedy and stuff like that. I'm like, people are always going to accuse you of being greedy when you put prices up, but it doesn't matter regardless. But I don't think that was the best move, but she put herself in a position where there wasn't much she could do, in a sense. Putting up capital gains is good. Things like that goes a long way. I think the really dumb thing is that she didn't put the top rate of tax up. That was the thing that drove me mad. Because those people that are paying the top rate, they're not working people, you know, or working class people. You know, those are upper middle class and the rich. But that term working people was so nebulous that Labour couldn't even define it. They struggled really hard in the media to actually define what that meant. And I found it crazy how, you know, the so-called their guru, Mr. McSweeney, couldn't come up with a definition before they ran with it. And it just made them look stupid on every interview they went on progressively. So with the budget, it's okay. It's not great for people who are disabled, I think. You know, they're changing rules around certain benefits, but it's really going to impact people that are out of work. And again, you know, depending on how you define things like austerity, that to me is a continuation of George Osborne's policies, because they were the people hit the most. So I'm surprised at some of the stuff she's done. Am I impressed? Not really. You know, the bar is set very low for Labour, in my opinion. But in terms of getting investment, things like that, I think it's really important. But it's kind of probably about 5 out of 10 at a push, if I'm being generous.
We're going to grade it. I like that.
Oh, okay, yeah, we'll grade it. I think probably 4 or 5 out of 10.
10 being worst. I mean, it doesn't matter with 5.
yeah, but I think 10's always the best, isn't it? So I'll say 5 out of 10 at best.
Liz?
Okay, I'll grade it first. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 10. And a 10 out of 10 would have been that she'd done the sensible thing and said, we need to rejoin the single market and the customs union, rather than trying to do this round the back door. I'm not going to tax working people, but I'm going to do it by, you know, taxing the employer who's, I mean, going to be hit. I mean, as it is, farm workers are probably going to cost the employers another £1,000 a year on top of all of the problems. So it means you'll employ less people. It means less growth, all of these things. So I think, because of the fact that I hoped with them getting a big majority that they would drop the red lines and get growth back by getting back in the European Union, that it's pretty bad. Yeah. And then the news on farming is bad, and that affects everybody's food, which most people don't understand. It was already under threat because of supermarket hegemony, then Brexit, and now this. It means that it's a win-win for massive corporations who want to produce food cheaply in these mega factories, which are so bad for the environment, so bad for animal welfare, and so bad for your health. And it means more imported food from places like South America and the Amazon, more Amazon clearance, more environmental damage. It doesn't make any sense.
No, generally it doesn't, does it? It was interesting, though, small farmers were meant to get some sort of exemption with the £1 million threshold. And it was really curious because you and I were having a bit of back and forth off camera talking about the value of property. What could you just explain to our viewers why that £1 million threshold doesn't really help farming?
Well, I understand that to most people who have an average wage, that £1 million is a lot of money. But when you're in the farming industry, the numbers are enormous. You know, your tractors are, you know, hundreds of thousands. Your fertilizer, you know, our fertilizer bill, tens of thousands every year. Your seed bill, the same. You're looking at huge numbers for huge risk. And, you know, often farmers lose money, especially when we have constant rain and things like this. And there is no longer any food subsidy. So it's even more risky, where a lot of farmers are actually only growing flowers because of the government policy, which means more imported food at a time when we've made it more difficult to trade, which makes no sense. So ultimately, if you looked at most farms, irrespective of the size of the farms, if you added up the cost of their animals, their machinery and stuff, you're going to be coming close to £1 million anyway. And if you look at the average price of a house in the Cotswolds where I live with an acre of land, you know, you're looking at somewhere between 1 and 2 million anyway. So it's very, what they should have done was said that there was an exemption for anyone who earns 80% of their earnings through agriculture. That would have been the best thing to do.
I'm a big proponent of farming and the protection of it. I mean, I know a lot of people in the Remain community or Rejoin community now are hacked off with farming because of Brexit, and they think that all farmers voted for it. But it's absolutely crucial to any economy. And throughout history, I mean, I've been learning about how essentially agriculture created governance, arithmetic, and writing, and we wouldn't be here without it, which is a wild thing to bring up. And we can talk about that later. I'm just aware that, Michael, we haven't had you in. What were your thoughts on all of this? And what was your grade for the budget? So Liz has got two.
Okay, great. I hadn't really thought about a grade. I don't know. I suppose about five, maybe. I quite like Rachel Reeves. I think she's quite clever, quite smart. But she's the first officer on the sinking ship, and you know, whatever she does is not going to turn the economy around. And I think there were two huge omissions. The first was global warming. There's virtually nothing about that, and that's clearly the most important issue facing us at the moment. And really, nothing to help small business. You know, the future is new business, and without it, we're just going to go on sinking. I mean, Brexit was such a big damage to the economy, and we have to replace this. We know that there are tens of thousands of businesses on the point of a bankruptcy. Where's the growth coming from? They keep prattling on about growth, and I think the problem is that on the front bench of the Labour Party, there's not a single person who's had even a day's experience of running a business. So they've got no idea. They're clueless, and they just think if we keep talking about growth, suddenly it's going to somehow happen. It isn't.
Isn't it going to happen with deregulation?
What?
Singapore and Thames? Isn't that going to be the...
Well, yes, that's what you want, yes.
PTSD.
Yes.
That is,
yeah.
It's PTSD, that is.
Go on.
No, a couple of things. With the single market stuff, there's no, like, rejoining the single market is quite difficult. We've gone over this on this channel before, but there's no, like, clear mechanism back in outside of EFTA or joining the EU fully. What they could have done is dynamic alignment. That would have helped a lot with exports. There was a farmer who did a whole batch of organic beetroot. He had to throw it out because of Brexit. And on the flowers point you made there, which was quite interesting, I do remember a lot of the Dutch exporters complaining about the UK border. So I guess they're making growing flowers would make sense, trying to export to the UK. They were complaining about it a while ago. The other thing is with food security, our border is very leaky. The Dover crossing is very leaky in terms of stuff getting through that shouldn't. There was like all sorts of stories around tainted meat constantly coming in.
I was going to say that's because there aren't any proper checks yet, are there? They keep putting the checks off because they haven't got the facilities to carry out the checks.
They've shut them down. Do you know the one in Portsmouth that costs?
Yeah. Lothbold, yeah.
Is that correct? I'm not sure if that's correct. You can correct us in the chat. I think it was 2 billion. It's just sat there now inoperational.
I think they reckoned when it was up and running that it would handle one lorry a month or something, and so they decided to. I think the council were trying to sell it off and get the money back, but it's just more craziness. And the funny thing is about it down at Sevington in Kent, the people running that operation are French company. So
well, that's crazy. We're becoming French. Just like our passports.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just insane. And yeah, you know, the other thing is if you're shipping over illegal foods, you've got 22 miles from Dover to Sevington to actually offload it somewhere.
Exactly.
So it's actually encouraging it. I mean, they did actually, it was on the BBC News this morning. They did catch some criminals this morning importing a whole load of illegal meat. But it's happening. All the time. It's, you know, we've encouraged it, and it's a disaster.
Think about what else is being smuggled as well. Absolutely. I mean, this border has been virtually open since January 2021. I mean,
And it's not just coming in from Europe. You know, there's lots of stuff coming from the rest of the world via Rotterdam. And Boris Johnson decided to leave all of the safety mechanisms to make sure we didn't get this stuff because, you know, we had to be free to please Bill Cash and all of the nutbags. Mm.
Sir William Nigel Paul Cash is a British politician who served as a Member of Parliament from 1984 to 2024.
And that's where we are. It's an absolute travesty. We have completely lost control. And all they do is bang on about, there's immigrants coming up in boats. It's kind of like, you know, you've got more risk of eating a kebab in your after your Saturday night pint and dying of some terrible food poisoning because it's some illegal meat. And you have an asylum seeker coming over here hoping to come and help us run this bloody country.
What if you're a pensioner who wakes up with an asylum seeker in your room, like Robert John Redcliffe? Someone just appears in your room when you wake up. Like, what were they doing the whole time? Like, that story's so funny too. It's like they just sat in your room, like waiting for you to wake up. Like, hi.
Well, isn't it funny that the majority of them that are slagging off immigrants are married to them? Donald Trump's had two out of three.
Yeah.
You've had Nigel Farage has had two girlfriends, one German, one French.
It's misdirection, isn't it? It's distraction.
I'm sick of it. Works. I know Trump went a bit, and we'll talk about Trump later, went a bit mad about it, but this is Nazi rhetoric. When they use the word invasion, when they use the word horde, when they use the word swarm, they're all, I can cite them to you.
Braverman got pulled up on that by a Holocaust survivor. A good few years ago, she was pulled up on the language she used there. It's a really interesting clip, that one. And
but she wouldn't withdraw, would she? She wouldn't back down.
Yeah, she was like, oh yeah, I do sound like them. Nice.
Her husband's Jewish.
Yeah.
Jenrick's wife is from Israel.
Yeah.
And worked and qualified in the US and the UK.
I know, but it's actually worse than when it happened 100 years, just under 100 years ago, because we've got the lessons. They didn't have the lessons before. They didn't know. They just sort of stumbled into it. Whereas now we're gaslighting the past and the lessons that were learned and minimizing it and doing this boiling frog thing where people have now become so, desensitized. People are desensitized and they're angry and disappointed. And it's a cocktail of, it is a poisonous cocktail.
The media love it. They go out in boats and they start filming and they're like, behind me, there's a whole boat and there's another boat. And that's what they do. They love it. They love the theatre of it, of maligning people. That's what they do in the summer. They'll just go out in boats, start filming people. They're like, you there, where are you going? And it's like, what are you doing?
It sells newspapers and they get the clicks online. And that's the truth. That's the sad truth of the matter is that look, going back, you know, in the history, going back to when there were hangings, public hangings. Look how many people used to go out and enjoy that on a Sunday afternoon on a hill somewhere. This sadistic appetite is still there, and mainly because of the right-wing press keeping it going.
Maybe that's something Jenrick could come up with. Public hangings, that would make him popular, wouldn't it?
You have to pay to get in.
I remember going to Lancaster Castle, which was the last working castle in the country. It closed a few years ago. And if you go up there, it shows you this room where they literally used to put them on a stool, open the doors, and then push them out. And that was it. But they'd do it on the net first and then push them out. And there'd be a hill of everybody watching. So, I think the British public would probably still quite like that now. Well, certainly the Americans of Trump. It's the same. It's mass. I don't know. It's a kind of a mass think of sadism.
Do you know that statistically, the countries that bring in capital punishment have a higher rate of murder?
Really?
Yeah. So it's just garbage. Like, I assume it is. There's some sort of sadism in seeing people die. You know, William Wallace, the Scottish independence fighter, who had his skull popped up on London Bridge for years. They found a whole load of skulls under London Bridge as well, about 10 years ago. From all the people that they'd hung and murdered and killed and hung, drawn and quartered and everything else in between. So they had them hanging up along the Thames to warn people off who were thinking about pirating and everything else. It's a pretty, pretty vicious society. I mean, going back to agriculture just a little bit, I mean, World War II was the lesson, Liz. You and I, again, we talked about that off air. And the fact that I think 30%, we can produce 30% the required amount of food was the statistic that came out of World War II, which is why we had to dig for victory.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we repealed the Corn Laws in 1846, and you know that needed to happen because the barons owned all of the land and they had control of food prices and it was squeezing the public. So I understand the need to do that. But what happened was that self-sufficiency plummeted, but we had an empire, so we could redirect. We had control of the food from other nations, which is why India, for instance, had a famine. We didn't. And now we're sort of repeating that in fast motion from Brexit in particular to now. And, you know, geopolitics are not looking good. If Trump gets in and Putin decides to stomp across Europe and invade the Baltic states and others, and where are we going to get the food from? Where are we going to get our food from? You know, so when you're talking about inheritance, like, oh, those rich farmers, you know, it's kind of like, well, if you're hungry, you're going to be sort of saying, well, who's going to feed us? Because does anyone here know how to go out? Are we going to get everybody in the Forest of Dean running around after the wild boar with sticks and spears? Because, you know, to ensure there's enough food for 68 million people is really, really scary. I mean, there's a great quote from Lord Plum in the 1970s. I can't remember it off the top of my head now, but the actual fear of not having enough food for this number of people, I find terrifying. And I would say to Rachel Reeves and Keir Starmer and certainly Steve Reed, you really need to think about this a lot deeper. If Trump gets in and we've got, you know, high tariffs coming through, Putin emboldened, oh, you know, I mean, I'll be okay because we've got a farm here and we've got food. But you know, what is going to happen? There's going to be real problems. And it happened fairly recently in Sri Lanka, where they upset their food system and then they ended up with riots.
What proportion of our food do we import right now?
Well, it has historically used to be 60% domestic and 40%
Oh, is it
imports.
still about that?
It's gone down since Brexit because many of our greenhouse growers have gone bust because the last government wouldn't help them keep open. So we've lost two huge salad growers. The Lee Valley area, which grew all of the cucumbers, peppers, tomatoes, most of those have stopped now. The government policy itself is encouraging people, farmers, to not grow food,
Yes.
which makes no sense.
No.
And so they haven't done a food security check. It's due to happen, I think, next year, but it's probably gone down an awful lot. And it's mostly fresh food that we import. We're very good on livestock because of our climate, which is why we've always eaten a lot of meat in this country. Yeah, but the floods are not helping either. So it's a really dire situation. It's serious. But everyone's going, oh yeah, they can pay you inheritance tax. And we can get more wages. It really doesn't work like that. It really doesn't. You're looking at less growth, not more growth.
The
You're
thing
looking.
I've been banging on about for a long time now is the fact that I don't think European suppliers are going to be that keen to come here.
They're not.
Frankly, if you're growing oranges or tomatoes or something in the south of Europe and you can go to Germany and go to anywhere without any problems, why are you going to send a lorry? And the lorry drivers don't want to come anyway. The lorry drivers sit in Kent for 2 days and they just don't want to, not going to do it. And if they do it, they're going to send us inferior products and they're going to overcharge us. And we're absolutely in their hands. There's nothing we can do about it.
That literally happened. I think it was this year. No, it might have been last year. We had a shortage of peppers and tomatoes, and that's when what's her name, Therese Coffey, was like, "Go eat turnips," and then we ran out of turnips. That literally happened here because I know they're the only vegetables I actually like, and then we ran out, and I was mad. I was like, "What am I on
because
pizza? Turnips? Are you stupid?"
didn't she
it's the
blame
other
that
thing
on?
that it, we're not it's not easy to get seeds in as well
Yeah.
because of Brexit.
Yes. So.
So for the Labour government, the EU keep asking them to get rid of the red lines. And in fact, I put a petition. It's not that they're checking it. It should be up any day now. I've put a petition up, and I hope everyone signs it, to abandon the red lines because they're Theresa May's red lines. They were made up by the Conservatives. Nobody voted for those red lines. They just voted in or out. And it was marginal. It was an overinterpretation of that result. And the Labour government, for some reason, are continuing with it. I suspect it's because of the AI. They see a Brexit advantage for AI because we're out of the EU rules. So how many people in this country go, great experiment on me with AI, and I'll lose my job because AI is going to drive it.
Go on, Michael. You be
they're much more worried about what the Daily Express and Nigel Farage might say. that's what they're worried about.
I felt that with the budget.
Yeah,
I actually felt that with the budget, that the budget was that tightrope walk because they can't do, they can't sort their comms out between the right-wing press and what they wanted to do, but also the budget restrictions. And I think there was a combination there of restrictions that made them create this budget. I think the changes that they made were so nuanced as well.
Mm.
There was an element of intelligence within that. I felt that Rachel Reeves had picked areas that were so nuanced that the press couldn't really run a story with it because it's too complex to explain in a simple, sharp headline. Yes. And I went, I wonder if that was because of what they'd said prior to coming in or if they did that on purpose to just knock the press off. Because the press are raving and ranting about it, but I'm not feeling the public are quite engaging with it because they don't quite see how capital gains tax
is not interested.
You have to explain it in detail to show how it would affect them, or national insurance.
Yeah.
I thought the only thing that... There was some interesting things. Private jets. we have 90,000 private jet flights a year. And I thought that was a good tax. It was quite funny seeing how she rammed that down Rishi Sunak's throat about traveling over to California. That was quite satisfying.
It could have been higher as well.
Could have been higher. I would have liked that. There was interesting with the 1 pence in a pint. I'm sure many pub owners would be so happy with that.
Well, especially as they're struggling as well and their wages bills have gone up and everything else, yeah.
Although youth generation aren't drinking anymore, drinking less and less, so pubs are dying out. I mean, we were talking about nightlife and the buses. Going to happen to London. I think 1,000 pubs and bars have closed this year. That's nuts. Oh, a minimum wage. Although I think we could debate that. I think that just brings it up in line with inflation for the last 24 years. So actually, you've just reset it back to what it should be instead of actually giving people something of an actual advantage. Any thoughts on any of those?
I think with the putting more national insurance contributions onto employers and doing a minimum wage increase, I think you got to be a bit careful about doing those two together, I think, because their costs have gone up in two different ways. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why, you know, raising it above inflation, current inflation, I think is good. So I don't have a massive issue with that. I think that those are generally good policies. I think it's not that bad.
But we need growth.
They're not growth, are they?
That's stuff. Well, you know, the more people, the more disposable income you have, that will help with growth to an extent. With the
provided
growth,
you've
stuff
got like, an employer, provided yeah, you've got provided, that, to pay you.
That's one of the issues. That, you know, she did talk about unemployment coming down still, as projected to come down still. So that's true. I think they boxed themselves in so much. And that was the big problem with the fiscal rule, which is something I've been talking about all year, really. Was saying the fiscal rule is stupid because even if you go above 100% debt to GDP ratio, it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world, considering France at 121%. But, you know, France aren't struggling to sell bonds or whatever to generate funds. You know, Macron nationalized EDF recently. They're talking about giving millions to Lebanon and things like that. So it's not like France are like bankrupt, are they? Their debt to GDP ratio is higher than us. So they set this dumb fiscal rule and they really boxed themselves in. And I think that was the most frustrating thing of seeing someone just constantly misplay. And then they're like, oh, you know, I didn't want to do this. Like, you didn't leave yourself many choices though, did you? Like, you really fumbled this one real bad. And that goes down to McSweeney, the campaign guy. Because, you know, he tried to triangulate so aggressively. But, you know, he's a campaign guy for a reason. He'll get you the win. And now you're stuck. That's what happened.
It's a bit of
but I don't even know. Did they win, or was it just that the Conservatives lost so badly? McSweeney is overblown.
It's that, because if he was so good, he would have got the top job, not Sue Gray. then he had to stab her in the back to take her job. He's a fraud. He's a budget Dominic Cummings. They all want to be Alistair Campbell so bad, but they don't understand the media. They're all data people. And they don't understand people or the media. That's their problem. So that's why he had to shiv someone who was competent in order to take her job. Because he had that job originally, and then he got fired. He got moved on because he's not that good.
It's funny as well, because we keep talking about their comms. All of us, I'm pretty sure, have higher numbers on our YouTube channels than Labour.
Really?
Which
you definitely do, Michael. You definitely do. You've got the best numbers here. You definitely do, yeah.
And I've seen Liz's numbers this week because we were chatting about that. You're smashing it. So I'm going, the only one I'm not unsure about this at this point is Imagine Myself. I was sure last week, but I'd have no idea if Labour's changed at all. So I'm a bit like, if you can't even do that, why are you in charge of the comms? And it says something about their media. I keep bringing it up almost every week because it's just ridiculous. A lot of problems that I was seeing within that budget and the reason they were running that tightrope was because they're worried about how to deal with the right-wing press, who they still see as powerful. And you're going, well, if you're not even running a YouTube channel, which is like basic 101 what you should be doing, or sorting out your Twitter account and your Instagram account and your TikTok account like Nigel Farage has been,
yeah.
How are you running comms at Labour?
And it depends.
Every decision that Starmer makes, it's a question of what would the Express and what would Farage say. And I think if he thinks if he gets anywhere closer to the EU, for example, rejecting Erasmus and so on, which is totally irrational, completely mad. But I think he thinks that the paper's going to suddenly say, oh, it's the first step of what's freedom of movement again. And they'll be saying that anyway. Whatever he does, they'll say he wants to go back in.
And then they did the winter fuel allowance, which has been the most unpopular thing. Yeah. I mean, Starmer's popularity wasn't that great. But I mean, the graph is like this. Yeah. You know, it's the biggest decline ever. It makes no sense to me saying that he's scared of the right-wing press, because if he is, all he's doing is actually playing to it.
To be fair, his strategy has been real bad. You know, when you look at the story around, you know, the freebies and stuff, when you look at the stories around the winter fuel payment, the way they've handled it is really bad. And you know, it's a complete disaster, honestly. Like, I don't know what kind of strategist they've got, but they're not very good.
I don't think he doesn't have a political mind, does he? He's a lawyer. He's probably very good on facts. He's probably very, very knowledgeable about the law. But when it comes to the dodging and diving and thinking on your feet that you've got to do as a politician if you're going to be successful, he hasn't got it. He just doesn't have it. And we're all seeing it. I mean, to lose so much popularity so quickly, I mean, you've got to be pretty bad.
We saw it during PMQs where he kept doing, like, his questions were so bad. His political instincts aren't great, and I think people, if you're following him closely enough, you would see it, you know, during his performances, his interviews. He's very awkward, especially when he gets cornered. He's like kind of is squirmy. But what is he, almost as bad as Alex? Almost as bad as this segue,
Tony. Almost as bad as segue. Trust. Did you see her on Mog's show today?
No.
She came out punching. No, I mean, because we're talking about people's popularity dipping. I mean, look at Truss versus Starmer. Isn't it actually on a par, I think?
Yeah.
Which is actually nuts.
Oh, that's unbelievable. Really?
She came out swinging today, suggesting that Rachel Reeves' policy was socialist, that you needed a free market economy, and then started saying if she was in charge, she'd scrap the OBR. No reason to do that at all. It's independent. You need it independent. And the Bank of England. She didn't quite say what she wanted with it. She seemed to allude that she would rein it in, so probably bring it back under government.
She wanted to abolish it, or get rid of its independence. Probably. I remember that. I didn't know we had Rachel Marx in charge of the economy. Jesus Christ, man. Everything anyone does is socialist. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've never heard anyone push back and go, so you hate the NHS then?
Yeah, why she probably does. No one? She probably does. Probably does
but
hate
it would
it.
Go down like a pint of sick with the population, because they'd go, right, well, you're not paying attention to you then, because it is loved by the populace despite how bad it is. I even found some interesting stats this week, which I think were by the Commonwealth OECD. I think it was a collaboration between the two. I'll put it up on here. But basically, it was showing that actually the efficiency of the NHS was at 90%. It was one of the top in the world. But interestingly, the US is right at the bottom of that. And that is the system that they want to bring in. They want the US system because they want everything to be free market. I can see you nodding, Liz.
Well, I know, because she definitely wants the US system. There's a big big dispute going on for a massive pig farm in Norfolk in her constituency, which she was behind, called for Cranswick. And there's huge legal battle going on with it. But, you know, just to think in that beautiful county, which is so rural and so traditional, that there could potentially be this massive mega farm, which you know, to live near them would be horrendous. But that's who she's working for. That's, well, you know, that's the IEA, and, you know, that's who's who she's doing the puppeteering for. And they think that I've spoken to some of the American journalists on farming, and they go, gee, she even calls herself a farmer's wife. I mean, what the hell are you doing, you Brits? You know, they think that we're completely and utterly backward because of the way that we exist. But this is our culture, and that's what really upsets me. Is I'm like, I don't want to be like the Americans. I'm not knocking them. America is America. That's their decision. I don't really want to be like America. I value British values.
But I feel British. But there are cousins. They had a civil war. Aren't they our cousins? Donald Trump. Well, get Biden's been going and saying about Irish inheritance. Donald Trump's mum was an immigrant from Scotland. Like the last two presidents have been deeply connected. And Obama's dad was from Kenya, which was part of the British Empire. Like they've all got almost direct connections.
And they're really crossed by immigrants coming in and taking over their country. Which isn't theirs.
Even though their entire country is based on that, and that is the entire history of humanity. It's insane. It's actually quite wild. Brexit, how's that going, Michael?
Oh, wonderfully, wonderfully. I think we covered that just now, actually, but no, completely, utterly hopeless. I mean, it's until we find a way of going back into the, getting some sort of arrangement whereby we're back in the single market or the customs union. I mean, there is no way that our economy is going to recover. It's just not possible. We're on a downward trajectory, and it's very, very depressing. And since the government are the most pro-Brexit party of all now, it's very sad, because there isn't really any hope. And you know, my beef with Starmer was that when he said 3 years ago, never, never, never over, my dead body will we go back in, it was so stupid. It just shut the door, painted himself into a corner at an early stage. All he should have said was, look, we had a referendum, people voted to leave, and we have to respect that, but things may change in the future, who knows? But now he couldn't do that because he's worried about what the Daily Express might say. And now we're here now with the whole of the cabinet, who are all voted to remain, are all saying, no, that's in the past, we've got to move on. I hate this thing about having to move on. You know, they've just told you you've got cancer, now you've got to move on. And it's just so depressing. But... As I rant on about every week, but I think it's the lack of hope. The fact there is really no hope. You can't sort of say, oh, well, perhaps if such and such changes, maybe things will get better. There is no way things are going to get better.
That was an incredibly dark Halloween-esque.
Yes, I'm sorry about that. I should have worn a black hat.
Play that in the intro. Let them know what's up.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there any positives, Madge, to Brexit that you can find anything?
I'm the wrong guy to ask for that. Aside from really exposing how freedom of movement didn't drive immigration as much as people said, I guess it dispelled a lot of the nonsense that people pushed. This idea we could go back to the Commonwealth moved on a long time ago. They all moved towards doing trade with neighbours rather than a country that's very far away. So I guess the fact that British people have to learn about trading rules and things like that, and how hard negotiations are, and how other countries don't mess about, like Canada, for example, where the UK keeps playing weird over cheese, and the Canadians aren't happy about that. We're about to learn why being in a bigger trading bloc is better than being in a small one. So we're having many educational lessons firsthand as to why we should have stayed in the largest trading bloc in the world rather than being a small little one. I mean, even the guy, the CEO of Eli Lilly, was saying, like, unless Britain does something interesting, he's not looking to invest there. And I'm like, right, let's, you know, this is it. You know, people are going to learn the hard way why you don't leave the big block.
Didn't we have a Brexiteer leave? A rich Italian just left.
He just left. Oh, yeah.
40.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's another good lesson there. You know, rich people will leave, but it's not overtaxed.
One of the biggest problems is this, that we have to create new businesses, and business has to be able to grow. But for any small or medium-sized business right now, it is virtually impossible to sell to the EU because of the paperwork. It's not the paperwork we have to do. It's when the stuff gets there, the customers don't want it. You know, if you can buy from Germany or Italy or Spain or whatever without any paperwork, get the goods the next day. And if you buy from the UK, the stuff is stuck in customs for a fortnight, and you've got to pay duty and VAT and all this stuff. People don't want it. So, I mean, it's really, really damaging. For big firms, it's okay. They got offices and people they'd employ to do these things. But
So and you're saying it creates jobs? Well, it creates bureaucratic jobs. There we go. There's our benefit. We did it. We found one.
Okay.
We found it. We did it.
Guys. We've got a labour shortage, Madge, so that's a bit of a problem because
if you pay enough, I can move across and be a bureaucrat for them. So we found the benefit, guys. We did it. That's why our unemployment is so low, because we need those admin staff.
Yeah, well, I think there is an aspect to that.
Sorry,
I have got some Brexit news.
Is it good?
Well, it's got potential to be good.
Okay.
It has been reported, but only in Politico and Farmers Weekly. But there is a non-government association called Feedback. And for the last 2 years, since the disastrous Australia trade deal was signed, they issued high court proceedings for judicial review. And it's all gotten a mess with all the COVID stuff and one here and another. Anyway, they were granted permission. And they also had their cost capped, which means that if they lose, they won't be done for too much cost. So, that, you know, because they're a charity, in effect, that's why the courts have done that. But Steve Reed, when he became when he was elected and became DEFRA secretary, he famously went into Parliament and said, never again will we let our farmers be undercut by Tory trade deals. And then after that, he got into office and something changed and he started fighting this court case. And so they're challenging the court's decision to cap the costs, which means it would be hard for this organisation to continue the JR. I mean, I don't think it will, because I think we'll get some public funding if that's the case. But we all know that the trade deals were wound through without any parliamentary oversight. Even some of the Tory MPs were furious about this. And so they're not challenging the trade deal per se, which we know Boris Johnson basically agreed on the back of a napkin while he was drinking loads of wine with Liz Truss. But they're actually challenging the fact that there wasn't enough parliamentary oversight, as well as there is no impact assessment, particularly on the environmental damage, given that we've signed up to the Paris Accord. So I feel very optimistic that we might find that they lose in court, and then this government would have to go through Parliament, all of these trade deals all over again. They would have to run them through Parliament before they can continue. And I think that will be quite interesting to see that happen. So I'm sure the government will fight it all the way up to the Supreme Court. And if that says, you know, that then if it goes to there, then it's got the potential to go to the ECHR. So it really is going to be very interesting, I think, as time goes on. So I feel quite excited by that, because at least there is a challenge there, which means that we're not being force-fed this toxic, horrible Brexit with terrible trade deals. And there is potential for the government to sort of say, well, actually, the courts have said that the Tory Brexit was not, you know, is not lawful. So it does give them the opportunity to sort of say it's not our fault. It was the Tories that stuffed it. So I hope that's what happens. But I do think they are rather attached to AI. And I don't know if you watched PMQs yesterday when Sunak and Starmer were having a love-in. And AI came up, because one of the Brexit advantages is this ability to experiment on AI on us because we're out of the EU regulation.
Which is pretty terrifying. It's been interesting seeing so many of the big wigs within AI attacking the EU for its regulation, but the regulation seems to be there as a preventative to make sure things don't get out of hand. There was an interesting piece I was looking at on the use of AI tech in Ukraine and Russia. And more AI tech is being experimented there. And essentially, they're not even having pilots, from what I've understood. It's AI only, which is wild, because you get into this real ethical conundrum of robots making a decision as to whether or not to kill a human. And yet, no regulations being brought up with that. That's really interesting. That is a positive news that you've brought up, though, going back onto that. I think it'll be interesting to see how much they challenge it. It'll be interesting to see what the Supreme Court says. The thing you said off camera, that there was a precedent set as well.
Yes, there is a precedent, because of some sort of oil extraction in Surrey, and the courts found against that, and it wasn't allowed to go ahead because of the environmental arguments. So That's powerful. And then, yeah, when we look at Cranswick and the mega farms and those sorts of things and the environmental damage, all of these things come together, which is where this sort of inheritance tax on us as the producers of food and the Brexit mess gets me furious because, you know, it's got to, you know, you've got to, especially when you've got Putin threatening our continent, you've got to think about, you've got to have a war brain and yeah. You know, just handing away your food security, it makes no sense at all to me, unless you want to starve a load of your, you know, the population. It doesn't make any sense.
I mean, within that, there's some wild stuff as well, because there were people complaining both in the States and in the UK, I think Reform members, about $3 billion being given over to Ukraine within the budget. I know we're going back a bit, but it is an important fact. And I was like, yeah, because it's cheaper for them to be paid to deal with that problem than to have him take Ukraine. And where do you think he ends up next? It's just how it works. It's, you know, that classic salami tactics, you know, slice by slice. And that's what he's done. That's how he took Crimea. That's how he took the border of the eastern border so far he's taken of Ukraine, bit by bit. And he's got a war machine. He can just throw bodies at it. He's got a tiny economy. I think it's the equivalent of Spain in terms of what it actually has. But yeah, there was something else. I'm going to slightly combine Brexit and the budget, because I think it got missed. And it's quite an interesting thing that got brought up. One of the Labour MPs, after the budget announcement, got up and said that Brexit was a bungled deal, as if it could have worked if they'd been in charge.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, I only caught it at the very end, and it was a Labour MP saying this. Any thoughts, Michael?
Well, just that Brexit could never work. It could not work. We were going to be much, much worse off once we left the EU, there's no deal that could have worked. You keep hearing this. It's not the right sort of Brexit. If it was done properly, or if we'd really left, then everything would be fine. The whole thing is just bound to fail. There was no way it would ever succeed.
No economist apart from the crazy Patrick Minford has said that it could work. And I think he's still stuck on that, even though everything he predicted has been completely and modelled.
Julian Jessop's the other one. There's two of them. The economists for Leave, I think there's a handful of them, yeah. It's unbelievable. And they talk absolute gobbledygook. It makes no sense. Oh, and that Catherine McBride.
Well, I find it quite depressing that in my comments each week, I get quite a lot of people telling me that either that we were right to leave because we got back sovereignty, and the other one is that it's just as bad everywhere else. You know, wherever you go, I mean, a number of times people tell me that Germany's on the point of collapse, is going bankrupt, and all the rest of it, as though that makes everything fine here. Bonkers.
It is. I've been to Germany recently. They don't have as many security guards. They do not have security tags on cheese. We do. We're the only country in the UK.
They've got it on the sausages. They've got security tags on the sausages and the stuff they actually want to take. The bratwurst,
German sausage. I mean, it's worth its weight in gold.
And the beer. They probably got it on that. But yeah.
But I've been to over the course of the last year or so, five or six different cities in Europe, random cities, and everywhere it's absolutely as plain as can be that the quality of life is better there. There's less stress, there's more optimism, and restaurants are nice, and there's lots going on and so on. You don't see boarded up shops, you don't see graffiti, you don't see homeless people in the streets. It's another world, but nonetheless, there are still plenty of people here who think it's just as bad everywhere else, so stop grumbling.
There was an interesting article just on that note about traveling over into Europe from, I think Politico was leaked yesterday. They claim they've got leaked documents from the EU demanding that they have, as part of a reset deal, the mobility program installed with the UK. I assume they want it either to get our youth to move over to Europe, which they're probably desperate for because we're in a war for kids. I think, by the way, this week, the birth rate went down to 1.49. It's gone down again. This is really concerning. I think there was a horrific stat for 18 to 29-year-olds that looks really bad. But the other thing I assume is that they want people to learn English. Mm. And so the easiest way to do that, I mean, you can send people to Ireland, no problem. But Ireland's only got so much of a capacity. You probably want the UK as part of that capacity for people to learn English. Then you can use it as a commerce vehicle for the rest of Europe. And I assume they're also thinking they'll go over there, they'll learn English, they'll be fluent and come back, and it'll increase our ability to trade with the rest of the world. Any thoughts, Madge?
Yeah, it seems that seems plausible. I think there's a social element to it as well, where when you visit places and you meet people, it changes your perspective on the kinds of people they are. Rather than, we saw the most racist areas were the ones where there were very little, was very little migration. So instead of seeing people and how they are, you kind of assume because of what you hear in the media. So I think there's the, I think that's the biggest aspect for them, the social aspect. It's one of the reasons why they wouldn't, give up on freedom of movement, even though the UK was a massive beneficiary on freedom of movement. But I think, this is a point I kind of wanted to make earlier, but with the UK not wanting to join the with the Labour Party, it's about immigration. You had McSweeney recently, God, I sound obsessed with the guy, talking about how Labour need to address immigration if they want to win the next election. So I think that's their main problem is, when Starmer talked about cutting net immigration and then Reeves was talking about growth, I'm like, well, we've got record vacancies, or we had record vacancies recently. We've got very low unemployment. Where are you going to magic up all these people? And I think that's why they're going again after people who are out of work, just like George Osborne did. And I think the FT had some analysis saying that you'd only get like 100,000 people or something, or 10,000 people into work with these policies. And so I think that's the main problem that, England has had for such a long time is immigration.
We need immigration because we haven't had enough kids. I mean, it's I've been saying it. Oh, I've been saying it for years. Everybody, the baby boomers, my generation, the pill was invented and the birth rate went down. And that's only continued to go down because it's become more expensive. You've relied on two people working to run a family. You don't have a woman staying at home as a full-time mother unless you're wealthy. And
Or dad, we've got to say,
dad,
sorry,
yes.
or a dad, sorry,
The
a
dream,
parent staying at home.
yes. The dream, yes.
But
No, these are
ultimately, we have got an aging population who are living longer. The reason that our population is at 67 million is because of the baby boomers living longer. And it is a problem across Europe. It's also a problem that they've got in China because they had the one child policy and they've got a top heavy aging elderly population. They just need to explain that, as in, we can't run the NHS, we can't run the country unless we've got immigration. But the other problem no one talks about, and I'll say it's what we've got here on the farm. One of our farm workers has gone to Australia because they pay three times
Yeah.
more, there's better conditions, blah, blah, blah. And we've got a huge amount of emigration going on because the young people don't want to live in this godforsaken country because it's been ransacked by Brexit.
I think that's an important point, I think a lot of people are leaving. I have two sons. They both immigrated for good, and a number of their friends have. They're all sort of well qualified and bright people, and people are going to go. I mean, there are greener pastures elsewhere, particularly in Australia and Canada and so on.
What about America?
No,
Is that green pasture?
you can't
Lovely
go there,
fast
can
segue, by the way. Thank you very much for
Okay.
that. He's been waiting all show.
Yep. That's what I'm here for. There was an interesting stat, just because you talk about emigration, there was an interesting stat that came up with a 150-year study into the United States about emigration and whether or not it increased crime. And the answer was no, 30% decrease. So you're as an immigrant into the United States, you're less likely to commit crime. And the logic behind that, I would assume, in part, is because they quite want to move to the States. They like the idea of the States, they like the idea of democracy, but also they don't want to go back home.
They
If
don't
they're
want to be
arrested,
deported. Yeah.
there's a likelihood they'll be deported. So actually, it's a huge control mechanism. It's just, and we were talking about Trump earlier, and he's had two wives from outside the United States. His mum's an immigrant. And so you're going, and I think you said his dad's German originally? I didn't know
Yeah.
that.
I think
I
his
got that
grandfather
correct.
is. I think his grandfather's German.
His grandfather's German.
I think so, yeah.
The country's built on it. I mean, it's got a historical narrative that's completely about immigration. And yet you've got the right over there going absolutely nuts about migrants and how they're damaging the country, even though the data doesn't back anything up.
Yeah, well, it's a hook, isn't it?
Here
It's a
they're all
constant.
terrorists and murderers, aren't they? Walking the streets, apparently, according to Honest Bob. But the thing about immigration is that if you're going to leave a country, especially if you can travel halfway across the world and you're going to go across the channel in a little boat, you've got to be pretty motivated. You've got to be pretty ambitious and pretty determined. These are the people we need. And I bet in all those hotels, so-called hotels, those slums they're living in, I bet there are doctors, there are probably nurses, there are probably all sorts of skilled people could be using. But no, we've got to keep them penned up because we can't process them yet and so on. It's just, and it's such an easy, cheap target for politicians, right-wing politicians, and And people are easily swayed to believing that they're all terrible, these immigrants.
It's very, very similar to camps, in my view. I think it's, I'm deeply uncomfortable with it. It is. And we've got used to it, but it's wrong. People have been in prison like that. It's a disgrace.
Trump's brought up the camps, bringing them back. You know, they had them for World War II for the Japanese, and there was a rule that existed in 1798, I think it was. But they brought back internment camps in the 1940s to deal with Japanese Americans. Ronald Reagan, ironically, you know, Trump's, you know, idol, actually apologized and gave out a compensation fund and said, you know, no amount of money can do any compensation for the damage I've done that we did to the Japanese Americans.
But they're not. I mean, they're free to come and go, aren't they? They're just provided with accommodation. I don't think anybody's
the internment camps in
I'm talking about the asylum seekers in the UK at the moment.
In the but they're not allowed to work. So...
No, exactly. I tell you something interesting. I know a guy. He came here to go to university and he qualified and he got his degree about 9 years ago and applied for right to remain. 9 years he's been here. He's got a flat, he's got a car, all the rest of it. He has, he's told every time he has a meeting, he's told you mustn't work. They've got no idea how he's living. Of course, he's been working 7 days a week for 9 years. And they're still processing his claim. It's a
Wow. I'll counter that with so Trump's talking about setting up internment camps if he gets in. I think there's some good news to talk about whether or not he'll win next week. The counterpoint is interesting because you were saying about having these people come over and they actually want to work harder than your average. Japanese Americans, they built a unit for World War II. They were most decorated in World War II. And no one talks about this, about how immigration could actually even help save a country. And there's plenty of examples in history of that. And it's scary when Trump's starting to go off on one saying that he wants to put all these migrants, which I think at the moment is about 12 million, in internment camps.
But Alex, that's just for the rednecks, isn't it? I mean, it's just to get the votes.
I think you might be right. It's difficult to say with him though, because I actually don't know.
I think he would do it. If it was doable, he would do it. He tried it with the Muslim ban, didn't he? And then the court struck him down. You know, he took out an Iranian general. Like, I think he was their top guy. Like if he can do it, he will. Like, you know, you had tear gassing protesters. Was it in around the White House? And when he did his photo op. His goons ran up on the Capitol building. Like, if he can get away with it, he would. Now, this is a guy who I think he got done for racism against Black Americans trying to rent property from him. Yep. Like, this guy is a deeply, deeply awful human being. And if he can get away with it, he would. He's literally, he didn't pay people. He didn't play contractors until they took him to court.
Yeah.
That's who he is. He'll push the line as far as he can until the courts or someone else tells him, no, you can't do that.
I mean, he was a bankrupt businessman by the time he got onto The Apprentice TV
show. Many times over. Many times.
Yeah. Three or four, isn't it? With failed opportunities, and yet managed to get on a TV show that embellished his fortune and made him look like he was an actual leader.
It's because he's got personality. That's why, and people love personality on TV shows. He's funny. He's. I'm telling you, he did my favorite Twitter video was him. You know, the one I told you about before, Alex, where he said, "Look at this photograph," and it was Biden denying ever meeting this person. And the lyrics is, "Look at this photograph," and he pulls out the photo, and it's Biden with that dude and Hunter Biden. I'm like, that's crazy. Like, he did in a perfect format. Like, sometimes he's generally funny. And that's why people like him. He'll say outlandish things. He literally attacked one of his own supporters for being overweight.
Are you serious?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He goes, get out of it. And he started dissing him for being overweight, despite the fact that Trump is overweight.
Yeah.
And then you're just like, okay. And there was like another guy said to Trump, oh, I'm not going to vote for you because of his policy. He goes, you aren't going to vote for me. You aren't going to vote for me. And like, no other politician will say that. So part of him is funny. The problem is he's also a fascist, borderline fascist.
Yeah,
you know, you can say Mussolini's a fascist. He's good at speaking. That's the problem.
I think his only interest is Donald Trump, and then he just wants to. Right now, he's fighting so hard because he doesn't want to spend the rest of his life in court or in prison. But I don't think he's got any principles, any morals. I don't think he's got any deep political thoughts. I think he just wants to be president. He just wants to be Mr. Big.
His principles are power and money.
Exactly. Yes. I think he's very similar in many ways to Johnson and to Farage. They're people who just love being in the limelight and are very powerful personalities because they've got the gift of the gab. And it must be very thrilling if everybody sort of piles out to see, you know, thousands of people come out to listen to you speak and so on. It must be fantastic. But I think that's what it's all about. I don't think he's had to change the word politically.
One of the reasons... Sorry, one of the reasons he ran in that RNC campaign is because the media were losing interest in him, because every time he'd say, oh, I'm going to run, I'm going to run. And then eventually they got bored of him saying it, and then he actually did it in order to keep media interest.
Yeah.
So that's why he did it in the end, and ironically, he won. But it's because he wants to be in the media all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost a drug for them, I think.
Yeah.
The three of them. And
oh, the thought of Trump being on my screens all the time. Oh, my God. It was 4 years of hell. And, you know, if he gets in, that might be the end of elections in America. And we've just got him forever. Oh.
He's not going to win, Liz. He's not going to
live long either. The amount of McDonald's that man eats is insane. Like, he can't. I'm surprised he's still alive now. Like, I genuinely, like, when I look at him, I'm thinking, dude, like, just stop.
I remember my sister saying to me, don't worry, Brexit's not going to win. And I was like, I don't know. I feel really worried about this. And I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and that was just, it was one of the worst days of my life. And I feel like next week could be repeating that whole feeling of like, oh no, everything's upside down again.
What do you think then, guys? Do you think he's going to win? Let's go, Michael.
I don't think he will win. I think Kamala will win, but I think there'll be a lot of trouble after that, a lot of rioting and all the rest of it. And he's never going to accept it. But I think he'll lose.
Why do you think he'll lose?
Because I think amongst all the crazies, there are enough people to perhaps think twice when it comes to actually voting. And I mean, it's neck and neck at the moment, isn't it? In fact, in the polls, she's slightly ahead. But it's just such an utterly crazy system. You know, we've got 17% of the population of America will decide this election. And if you vote in California or in Texas, I mean, your vote is a complete waste of time. It's a terrific condemnation of first past the post. It's just mad, really. The fact that for the last few weeks, they've all been running around these seven states and ignoring the rest.
Liz?
It's a house of horrors. I don't know. I'm scared. If I say I think he's not going to win, then he's going to win. So I don't want to say anything. I don't want to jinx it. Yeah. I don't want him to win. I really, really, really don't want him to win, because I think it'll be terrible if he wins. So
Madge,
I'm saying if I was going to bet, I'd put my money on the Donald. I think he's going to win.
Really?
He's smiling.
Oh no, it's funny. I won £5 last time he won. I bet my friend £5 he'd win, and then I won £5, and my friend was fuming, and it was hilarious. So I think he's gonna win. I mean, to be fair, I don't like, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, has happened under the Biden presidency. You look at it and you're thinking, you know, like, what are you doing? Like, honestly, when you look at their Middle East policies, like, do you want to piss off minorities? Do you want to piss off the Arab base? Like, really, guys? And so, like, you know, like, it wouldn't surprise me if she lost in some way. She's very, the fact that they didn't have a proper primary, the fact that they pushed her into the role, I'm just like, what are you guys doing, honestly? You know, the fact that Biden stayed in as long as he did.
I will defend him on that. I don't think there was any time to get a proper primary up and running.
I think they could have done.
I think you had to do it.
Who do you think is going to win?
I think Kamala Harris, and I'm basing that on recent polls that have come out about who's considered the most popular. Looks like they're both in the negative, but Trump's way down. I mean, that whole thing in New York this week where Tom Hinchcliffe, who is renowned for racist comedy, it's not hidden, it's really obvious, came out and just slated everyone. Then you watch the rest of it and you're like, I think there was anti-Semitic comments. I think Tucker Carlson made a swipe and made up nationalities about Kamala Harris. Hulk Hogan came out and couldn't rip off his shirt, and you were like, wow, that's a bad omen after like, what, 50 years of wrestling and ripping off his shirt. He couldn't do it.
He's getting on, poor fella.
Yeah. And I think there's just been a lot of things that have hampered him, but I think that really nailed it. And we were talking to you, I mean, you mentioned some of the minority groups. There's, I think, 300,000 Puerto Ricans in Pennsylvania alone. 300,000. You've lost that state if you do something like that. He's come out and denied it and said, oh, I don't know who he is and I didn't choose him. It's like your rally. Like, where's the ownership there?
His speech was on the teleprompter, apparently.
It's the wrong script.
Wrong script.
The wrong script. It was the draft.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we can but hope. We can but hope.
Yes.
Because I think it's something that we don't need.
I'm notoriously bad at predictions, so we're all right, guys. We're okay.
God. When do we get the results? When do we get the results?
Oh, about 3 months' time after they've argued. Apparently it's not that quick. But
if they send the vote counters from Sunderland, we should be okay. That's who they need to get in. Those guys are quick.
Okay. Oh God!
When you look at his record, I mean, it's just beyond belief that tens of millions of people are going to go out and vote for him. Just almost.
So, what is it that's actually grabbing them? That's the thing I don't get.
He knows how to make America great again.
He does.
That's what they're voting for. Like getting Brexit done, we'll all be rich.
Exactly. Sum it up.
It is it's madness. Yes, it's mad. It's a feeling of, oh, I feel great because I've voted for the Donald. And I feel great because Brexit is great.
As it's Halloween, what would you describe the current situation in America as a Halloween movie? What movie would you pick?
I think I'd choose The Exorcist.
Oh, nice, nice. That's a good one. That's a good one. That's good. That's good.
Nightmare on Trump Towers.
Matt?
I'd go Friday the 13th because no matter how much they throw at the guy, he just keeps walking towards him. He's not running, he's just walking towards him, and he's ready. You know, it doesn't matter how fast you run from fascism in America, they are chasing after you.
Yeah, it feels. I'm feeling positive about it. I'm going with Alan Lickman, 13 Keys of Power.
You got a horror film? You want to pick a horror film?
I mean, I was thinking of Nightmare on Trump Tower. I've got to be honest, Liz. Great minds think
alike. Sorry, sorry,
no,
I was doing
it. No, it's fine. And I'm a.
You always have to have a backup.
And The Exorcist was pretty good.
Exorcist 2?
Exorcist 2, yeah.
That would make sense.
It's literally a hot part 2 Halloween, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Halloween part 2 is actually quite scary. And I think that was. I know a couple of journalists have gone out there and I've literally said to them, just be careful. Because whoever wins, you're going to lose. You either get Trump in there. I have no idea how the left are going to respond to that. And then you've got all the Democrats as a better description. And if he loses, I think it'll just kick off. It really will kick off.
I think so too. I think so.
You can always go with the Omen.
The Omen. What was the one with the where everyone is allowed to kill on one night? What was
Purge. That? Purge. Yeah, that would be good. Like
Purge. Yeah.
That's that makes sense. It was in America. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's set up in America. I feel like you're about to have a purge. That would be it, I think. But the problem I have with that is I just can't see, like, there's a generational divide here. There was interesting, there's a gender divide here. Interestingly, the stats are showing that women are now gravitated towards Kamala Harris more, and men have gravitated more towards Trump. So there's that. But I think the Roe v. Wade thing has just pissed everyone off to such an extent. It's just going to be overturned in legislation, and that'll be the end of it. I mean, at least in federal legislation, no idea about the Constitution.
I think there'll be some conservative-leaning women who will secretly vote for Kamala Harris based on like the protections for women, because what Trump did to the Supreme Court is nuts. So I think there might be some, you know how we have shy Tories in this country, there might be some shy Kamala Harris voters. Well, at least we hope for some, because I imagine that would have messed up a lot of people's plans when they abolished Roe v. Wade. Like getting an abortion out of state, by the sounds of it, sounds like a nightmare.
On that note. Bye everyone. Happy Halloween.
Bye.
Hail the lamb.
Happy Halloween. Yep.